It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
55 people have died of COVID-19 at the Cobble Hill Health Center here in Brooklyn. That's the most in the state, but they are hardly alone. Of the more than 19,000 COVID-19 deaths in New York State, more than 3,500 have been in nursing homes and long-term health care facilities. This is a similar story nationwide. Nursing homes say they desperately need more testing and personal protective equipment for their staffs. Without it, they say, they have been unable to adequately quarantine infected residents and staff, resulting in devastatingly deadly outbreaks.
We feel like we have been ignored. Our workers are first-class heroes. They've been treated like third-class citizens. Our residents are amazing people. What's left of the greatest generation, they've been treated as third-class citizens.
The National Guard and the VA are providing testing, PPE, and are disinfecting nursing homes in Georgia, Alabama, New Jersey, Colorado, and other places. More than half of all COVID-19 deaths in Massachusetts have been at nursing homes. The governor of West Virginia has mandated testing of all nursing home residents in that state. 73-year-old Jimmy Dunn is a resident of the Long Island State Veterans Home in New York. His wife, Carol, is nervous because there are COVID-19 cases on his floor.
I guess just not knowing what is actually happening over there. Yes, that's very difficult. They may not even be getting him out of bed to beat him. You know, he may not even be getting that kind of exercise anymore. That's upsetting.
The mayor of New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio, said that they are surging PPE and clinical volunteers to nursing homes in the city. Nursing homes, Sandra, are frustrated they have not been prioritized given the fact that this outbreak first started in a nursing home in Seattle.
All right, that was Brian Yenis of Fox News. Sandy Rios with you. You know, all the stories coming out of this virus, I think this whole issue of how people are being treated in nursing homes probably hurts me as much as anything. First of all, we know that they have our grandparents and great-grandparents in nursing homes have not been able to leave their rooms. People can't come and visit them. Many have died without their loved ones around. We know that the virus has hit them much harder than any other particular population. They are more vulnerable. But now, here's the thing. Here's the thing that Brian didn't say, and I want you to know, because this, to me, is horrific. It's not just that the elderly are more vulnerable. It isn't just that. It is not just that. Listen to this story. This is Michael Goodwin, and this is a Fox News story. Coronavirus nursing home policy, Cuomo approach, proves tragic, which I believe, by the way, this is me talking, not his headline. This is the approach that's being used around the country, and no wonder. There are so many deaths in nursing homes, and this is what it is. Start with the knowledge Albany, New York had for months that the coronavirus was extra lethal for the elderly. Study after study showed death rates climbed with age, especially among those with serious pre-existing health issues. That describes the entire population in most nursing homes. Then look now at the infamous March 25th directive from the New York State Department of Health that orders those homes and rehabilitation centers to admit and readmit patients sick with the coronavirus. And then Michael writes, the devil comes in the first sentence of the fifth paragraph. Quote, no resident shall be denied readmission or admission to the NH solely based on a confirmed or suspected diagnosis of COVID-19. Do you catch that? So if you had COVID-19 or you were tested positive for it, you had to be admitted into the nursing home. You could not be refused. And so, and whether it was a readmission or an admission, anybody with COVID-19 was, the nursing homes had to take them in. They were required by law not to say no. All right, so Michael puts it this way. The concept is obscene for the same reason that you don't strike a match near gasoline. Anyone carrying the virus should be banned from nursing homes, not forced on them. But that's what's been happening in nursing homes around the country. Why do you think the numbers are so high? I bet when we track this down, when the story is written after this, I'm not sure. I would suspect that the nursing homes where there were such incredible deaths, where your grandparents, maybe some of you have lost loved ones in this last month, 2 months, in nursing homes from COVID, or, you know, they said it was COVID and you didn't know. I bet if you investigate what the rules are in your center, at least if it's in some of these blue states, for sure, Washington, and other ways that wise that people have been taken into the homes who had COVID, and they were forced to do that by their governments. Now, you should check on that, and you should be mad. I'm mad. I'm furious. How dare we treat our elderly in this fashion? How dare we treat our parents? Is this not an example of the denigration of a society that should put their loved ones at risk? And that reminds me of something else I read this morning. Bill Gates, who, you know, is so famous now for spending millions and millions of dollars to, you know, find vaccines, especially one for COVID-19, for dealing in world health. They say he's like a god among those in the health industry. He is, you know, a champion of the World Health Organization, which is affiliated with China now, especially, where President Trump just recently withdrew funding from them, but now China is stepping up and giving them lots of money. And Bill Gates loves the World Health Organization. And yet, ask anyone the reputation of Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates, the Gates Foundation. People think it's just wonderful what they do with their money. Well, not really. It's not only on this this plan to force the entire globe to be vaccinated for COVID-19. And of course, they're rushing to find that the vaccination, the thing that's going to make us completely immune to it. But of course, the silly part about that is all of these viruses mutate. And so it's like the flu vaccine. Not one vaccine works. There are too many strains of flu. It will be the same thing with COVID. Nevertheless, Gates has it in his head that he's going to find a vaccine, but he wants to force every single person on the globe to take that vaccine, and wants to force you to, you know, not be able to get a job or go to school or really have a life unless you have a certificate that says you have that vaccine. That's Bill Gates, and that's just a tiny bit of the creepiness of what he's proposing. Now, Melinda, his wife, just made a statement a few days ago. She's announcing the recent Global Family Planning Summit in London. And they're going to funnel, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is going to funnel $375 million to population control efforts over the next 4 years. 60% increase above what they've given so far. Okay, so what is that important? Well, because you know what they're funding? They're funding abortions because they are big on population control. And they're doing this very clearly, and they say it, as a response to President Trump's decision to institute what's called the Mexico City policy, which means that a federal United States federal money will not go to promoting abortion or be given to family organizations globally that perform abortions or support abortions. So Melinda and Bill are going to step in, and they're going to make it possible for the world to get more abortions. Isn't that lovely? And the reason I mentioned that in the context of the nursing home story is that it's population control. Can you not see a theme? Wouldn't it be great to thin the herd, as they call it? That is what they call it. We get rid of all the, you know, the useless eaters, as the Nazis used to call them, people that can't contribute anymore. We should just, you know, get rid of them. Wouldn't that be merciful for them? And wouldn't it certainly help us economically? I'm just saying, I'm not saying Bill and Melinda are openly saying that, but I am telling you, the people who are into population control, that is part of their psyche. Don't think it isn't. And so that's what we're seeing, though, in living color in our nursing homes. And speaking of that, then, we had a doctor talking yesterday on the news about, you know, in the midst of all these states trying to open up, well, last night, it was Martha who had this doctor on, who now says, well, no, now we think our models are showing there are going to be more deaths. And I thought you should hear what he had to say. Dr. Christopher Murray, the newest projection of deaths, that's clip 13.
We're seeing several things that are driving up the forecasts. First, in a number of states, but not yet all, states have been revising their death numbers to capture people that were presumptive COVID deaths. They didn't perhaps get tested before they died. Deaths at nursing homes are an example. That increased number of deaths is, you know, making us realize that more people have already died than any of us thought before those changes in the death data. We're seeing a number of places with pretty long, protracted, flat peaks where, you know, in a bunch of places, for example, in Europe that put in social distancing in Spain and Italy, the epidemic came up and then it would drop down really quickly afterwards. But we're seeing in New York, a number of other states, quite protracted periods. And that every day that you're at the peak, a lot of people are dying as well as a lot of people suffering. So that's
Back with you. That's Dr. Christopher Murray on with Martha. And he goes on. What he's saying is, oh, no. You know, the curve must be defended. The original projections, which have proved completely bogus, must be defended. And now we're finding that actually more people have died. But let me just remind you what we know. In fact, I'll remind you through a different story. On April the 19th, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker was asked at a press conference about a reported death in the state of a teenager and whether that individual had, quote unquote, underlying conditions. The governor turned the microphone over to Public Health Director Ngozi Ezike. And this is what Ezike said. I just want to be clear in terms of the definition of people dying of COVID. So the case definition is very simplistic. It means at the time of death, it was a COVID-positive diagnosis. So that means that if you were in hospice and had already been given a few weeks to live, and then you also were found to have COVID, that would be counted as a COVID death. It means that technically, even if you died of a clear alternate cause, but you had COVID at the same time, it's still listed as a COVID death. So everyone who was listed as a COVID death doesn't mean that it was the cause of death, but they had COVID at the time of death. I hope that's helpful. That's what she said. And so I just want to, you know, pair that with what the doctor just said about, oh, no, we're learning more people have died. We had no idea, so the death numbers are increasing. We know that this is bogus, and I just want you to be aware of that. I want to play just a short clip of what Dr. Erickson, the gentleman who owns the urgent cares in California, said. And we played a long clip of his press conference, he and his partner, just a few days ago. But just to remind you of the common sense that they brought to this discussion, this is clip 8.
1,227 deaths in the state of California with a possible incidence or prevalence of 4.7 million. That means you have a 0.03 chance of dying from COVID-19 in the state of California. 0.03 chance of dying from COVID in the state of California. Does that necessitate sheltering in place? Does that necessitate shutting down medical systems? Does that necessitate people being out of work?
And of course, he said a lot more than that, but I wanted to remind you of the theme of what he said. He lays out the whole thing. In fact, we'll put that that link on our Facebook page again. I told you yesterday that YouTube had taken it down, and now we found out a YouTube executive actually did some sort of an interview or exchange that was captured. And she said, oh, we don't allow anything on YouTube that doesn't comport with the World Health Organization guidelines. It doesn't agree with World Health Organization. That's disinformation. And so they had taken it down. But we have a link that's still working, and we'd like to put that up. I have to say, if the craziness of this time is not soaking in with you, if you have people around you who still don't understand how they can be deceived and how they are being, talk about disinformation, talk about Soviet Pravda. I talked about that a few days ago. I never thought in my lifetime I would ever see such, but we are seeing it now. Our states are opening, and we should be grateful. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here's Dan Steiner, president of Preborn, a ministry dedicated to helping save preborn babies from abortion through ultrasound.
I sense God's broken heart over the issue of abortion. You see, he sees every little baby that's being formed in the mother's womb, and it breaks his heart to see when the lifetime that he has planned for them is taken from them violently so often.
Preborn is the direct competition to Planned Parenthood. By letting a mother see her baby on ultrasound and hear her baby's heartbeat, she'll choose life 80% of the time. For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies whose lives were spared. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Seth Appleton, Principal Executive Vice President of Ginnie Mae, the Government National Mortgage Association. His office promotes homeownership in the United States by helping to lower the homeownership costs. Jeremiah 29:11 reminds us of God's blessings of prosperity. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to bless Seth Appleton as he works to create more home ownership opportunities for more Americans. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. Join us as we count down to the National Day of Prayer. Details available at pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text pound 250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text pound 250 with the keyword baby. Text pound 250 with the keyword baby. One of the more heartbreaking parts of the global pandemic has been social distancing. Many families and loved ones separated, grandparents isolated from their children and grandchildren. It's been tough. The Lindell family of Litchfield, Minnesota knows all about that. Jerry was rehabbing at a nursing home when the virus broke out. The facility went on lockdown. That meant his wife, Beverly, was no longer able to visit. Married for 63 years and now separated because of the virus. Well, fortunately, Jerry made a speedy recovery. He was able to go home, and he was also able to surprise his wife just in time for her 84th birthday. And when the pair was reunited, well, they forgot all about social distancing. You can watch the entire video on my website, toddstarnes.com. Be sure to grab some Kleenex. It's a tearjerker. As always, let not your heart be troubled, America. Be prudent, but don't panic. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. A friend of mine just sent me something important that I want to drop in here. North Carolina. He's from North Carolina. And now I'm just now seeing this, so I can't. He says... of course, as a Democratic governor, we know that. And there was a peaceful protest on public property on the sidewalk owned by the people who were arrested by the governor's goons. And I just watched them being arrested. It was like, I don't know all of the story, except I know my friend who sent this, and I trust him. It looked like just a couple, a regular couple, like a very nice couple. And they're both being arrested, handcuffed. And he's saying, why am I being arrested? Why am I being arrested? And the video is available still on Facebook. We will post that on our Facebook page. As a matter of fact, I'll send it right this minute to Adam. And those of you in North Carolina, maybe could, if you have a, if any of you know anything about this, give us a call. If you have some information about it, but I just want you to be aware of that. That happened in North Carolina either this morning or last night. I'm not clear about that, but we really are kind of descending into a police state, and that makes our next a conversation maybe even more important. Dr. John Lott has been a friend of mine for a long time. That's not his bio. He's a professor statistical. He's taught at some of the most important major universities in the country, and then really morphed into the nation's leading expert on guns and gun control and the Second Amendment. I have to say, it's paid a great price for that. He founded Crime Prevention Research Center. By the way, you can get all of their information at crimeresearch.org. And John is tracking what these various governors, and I'm assuming maybe North Carolina is having this problem too, since there seems to be a theme among these governors on the left and mayors. They do want to sort of take away all of our rights, and this COVID-19 pandemic is an excuse for them to do that. John, thanks for joining us this morning.
That's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, okay, so John, gun sales are way up. I don't know the stats. I know that you do. And I maybe you could tell us that and then also tell us why you think that is. Why would they be way up right now?
I know there have been huge increases in gun sales over the last couple months. Record levels, over 2 million gun sales in March. That's way above what it was even during the 2016 election, where kind of concerns about what was going to be happening with gun control motivated a lot of people to go and purchase guns. And I think it's pretty obvious why people are doing that. I mean, you have a number of police departments around the country which are no longer responding to many calls that people have. You have some place like the Detroit Police Department, which has had over 20% of the police either ill or in quarantine. Concerns have existed that even if they do catch a criminal, they're not arresting them because they don't want to introduce new people to the prison population. And you have a large number of police departments or prisons and jails around the country releasing anything from 20% to 50% of the prisoners that they have there.
You know, let me read from Daniel Horowitz wrote an article about that just this morning. And I want to read just a little bit about what he had to say. He said, more sex offenders released nationwide as peaceful Americans are arrested. He gives an example. I'm not going to go into that. But he says, the crime has skyrocketed in parts of New York, with auto theft up 63%, commercial burglaries up 75%. And then in another article this morning, I think it was PJ Media, they talk about the Green River serial killer almost got out of prison in Washington State because of the Wuhan virus. And it was only by the vote of one judge in a court that kept him in prison. But they are actually releasing even people who have murdered several people. One guy was a rapist. They released him in New York and he got out and he's already raped someone else. So, John, I just wanted to be very graphic about why people might want to have guns. So how are these governors and mayors and governing authorities responding, John, from your perspective?
Right. Well, just before I get into that, Washington State case was pretty amazing. I mean, obviously, it's a very Democratic-controlled state Supreme Court that was there, but by a 5-4 vote, just barely, they voted against releasing, a number of serial murderers that were there. It was really quite shocking that something like that would be that close to being decided in that way. But, I can't remember the rest of your question that you had there.
I think it probably wasn't very well formed, so let me try it again. So you've written an article, John, on what you've seen governors in various parts of the country do to try to stop people from being able to arm themselves and buy guns. So tell us about that part.
Sure. Well, I mean, you have 7 states which to varying degrees have prevented people from being able to go and buy guns. 4 of them have left it up to local governments to decide whether to do it, and 3 have closed down gun stores as not being essential. And, if police are able to go and protect people, I understand the Democrats' normal claim, or gun control activists' normal claim, that you know, if you're in trouble, you can always call the police. Of course, even in the best of times, you know, 6 minute response time is extremely good response time, and people may not have the luxury of that much time, even in the best of times, to wait. And now we're in a situation where police can't respond. You know, you have situations here where gun control advocates who normally try to go and claim that they're for reasonable gun control are saying, look, people have a right, according to the courts, to own a gun in their home, but they're saying that doesn't give you a right to be able to go and purchase a gun. And it seems to me kind of bizarre that they're willing to not understand that if you ban people being able to go and buy guns, that takes away any right that they might have to be able to go and own a gun for self-protection within their home.
You know, as a matter of fact, you quote Chris Brown, who's the president of the Brady campaign. And for people that are younger, most of them are now, the Brady campaign was all about reducing the ability for people to buy guns. Brady was shot when President Reagan, the attempted assassination of President Reagan. He lived, but he was very disabled. So his family became strong advocates of gun control. So this is what Chris Brown, the president of the Brady campaign, said. Having gun stores listed as essential is a contemptible and exploitative move by the gun lobby to put industry profits over public safety. What would be your response? That sounds, she's probably right, right? So in other words,
right, yeah,
if you can still go to a gun store, you can infect people with COVID, and so it isn't essential. That's what she's saying.
Well, yeah, she goes beyond that. She says, quote, there's no constitutional right to immediately buy or sell guns, and there's certainly no right to spread the coronavirus while buying or selling guns. Here's the deal, and that is you can't, for certain things, treat them differently than other things. So if you're going to have, you know, in constitutional law, if I were to have a one penny tax just on newspapers, the courts would strike that down instantly. I could have a one penny tax on everything. But if I just singled out newspapers or applied it differentially to newspapers, then the courts would say, you know, you're trying to stop a guaranteed right in the Bill of Rights there. And you have a similar type of argument with regard to guns. If they have, they can't, you know, if they allow you to go and buy groceries or go and allow you to go and buy many types of products that are there, the more products that they allow, the harder it is to go and say, we're going to stop, because we're going to stop your ability to go and purchase a gun to be able to go and protect yourself and your family. Look, we're not at the stage where we're having an apocalypse right now by any means. But just as people go and buy fire extinguishers because they might need protection at some point in the future, so it's understandable that people, you know, in case there were shortages or in case the police become even less able to go and respond, or in case, given the number of prisoners released, you have increased crime, it's understandable that people want to at least have the option to be able to go and protect themselves. And, you know, they let open a lot of stores, and there's a lot of inconsistencies in rules that different governors have put out there, which makes it hard for them to go and explain why they have particularly stringent requirements or prohibitions with guns. I mean, you can go and say, we're going to have social distancing in these stores, or you may even limit the number of people who can be in a store at any one point in time. But if you're going to do that for some stores, you're going to have to do it then for people, at least be that liberal with regard to people being able to purchase guns.
You know, it needs to be pointed out, I think, that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security actually updated its list of essential businesses, and they included gun stores, and that made, of course, the gun lobby that wants to stop the sale of guns very, very angry. And I guess, you know, it's a rule, it's not a law, John, but you said, what, three governors have closed down gun stores. Would that include Northam in Virginia?
No, it doesn't include Virginia.
You know, what are the three states?
Well, it's New York, New Mexico, and I'm trying to remember the other state, which has closed it down.
Yeah. You know, in Virginia, I know, you know, about a month ago, I think it was, they had a huge rally, and it was people, you know, carrying their guns, and I wondered, from your perspective, as someone who watches this very closely, this is your area of expertise, do you think that rally with thousands of gun owners who showed up for that rally at the Capitol was effective?
I don't really think it had much of an impact because, you know, the Democrats who now control the state legislature as well as the governorship in Virginia were pretty much set on what they were going to vote on. I mean, they've passed about a dozen new gun control laws in Virginia, making Virginia going from a relatively free state in terms of people's ability to go and own guns for protection to one of the more restrictive states in the country. They've made it much more costly for people to be able to go and buy guns. And my work convinces me that the people that they're hurting the most in terms of by making it costly for people to be able to go and have guns for protection are going to be the people who are most likely victims of violent crime. That overwhelmingly tends to be poor blacks who live in high crime urban areas. And the third state was Massachusetts. But Massachusetts, New York, and New Mexico have banned. And then the states that leave it up to local governments are California, Washington State, Michigan, and Vermont.
You know, it really is shocking, John, when you pair this information with the fact that these governors at the same time are releasing all these criminals upon the population, and that police are, you know, getting sick or not showing up for work, whatever they're doing. I mean, it is just like the perfect storm. It's really very frightening. And so I know this, you're a stats guy, but still, let me ask you your opinion about this, John. I think we're going to be coming out of these restrictions. I think we're going to be coming back to normal, inching our way back. Do you think see things going back to normal in terms of gun rights, or do you think the gun opponents, the Second Amendment opponents, are going to have made some headway after all this?
Well, I think a lot depends on what happens in the election this year. You know, you have a very divided Supreme Court. There's just a decision brought down just a few days ago where they punted on the New York City case, which essentially had banned people's ability to go and carry guns outside of their home. Even if you had a license there in New York City, you hadn't been able to take your gun from one residence to another. New York City, when it went to the Supreme Court, tried to nullify it by somewhat changing rules there, and Roberts joined with the four liberal members of the Supreme Court to say that the case was moot, that it no longer was relevant because New York City had changed its regulations to some extent. But, you know, you're going to need to pick up at least one more member of the Supreme Court for a Republican appointee to be able to really make any headway, I think.
Yes. Yeah, and just on that case, John, the music's playing. So let me just say that John Alito wrote a scathing dissent on that, along with Neil Gorsuch and Judge Clarence Thomas. No, your point is well taken. So the point you're trying to make is we cannot trust the Supreme Court as it currently sits with its current personnel to have our backs on the Second Amendment, because John Roberts is just pretty cowardly and very political. It's an amazing thing to watch. John Lott, you can get his information at crimeresearch.org. He's the president of Crime Prevention Research Center, the best in the land in terms of stats on guns. And we'll put his article, Using the COVID-19 Pandemic to Justify a Gun Ban, on our Facebook page. John, thank you as always. Sandy Rios in the morning.
So Aaron took it as Moses said and ran into the midst of the assembly. And behold, the plague had already begun among the people. And he put on the incense and made atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living. And the plague was stopped. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Often when the concept of intercession is raised, we normally think about prayer, and we should. Prayer is one form of intercession. Here we see another, living intercession. At the climax of a plague, Aaron runs into the fray, armed with incense, and where he stands, the plague stops. Aaron literally stands between the living and the dead. May God move us to be living intercessors for our day, and where we take our stand in Christ, the plague stops.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
I just want to say thank you to AFR Radio. You guys have really inspired me to start picking up my phone and getting involved in the political process in our country.
We're thankful to hear how God is using American Family Radio. And we'd love to hear your story. Call right now and leave a voicemail on our listener line. Call 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893.
Thank you, AFR.
This is Franklin Graham. As news about the coronavirus seems to worsen, many people are feeling overwhelmed, anxious, even fearful. We want to help. At the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, we have a prayer line that's open 24/7. We have staff who would love to speak with you, pray with you. Remember, God loves you.
Call 1-888-388-2683. That's 1-888-388-2683. Or visit billygraham.org.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The way the human body builds up its immune system is by encountering viruses and bacteria in the course of everyday life. This allows the body's natural defense mechanisms to strengthen its ability to fight them off. We also know that social isolation weakens the human immune system. When governors issue incarceration in place orders and require us to be socially isolated, they are not helping us, they are hurting us. Prolonged isolation weakens our immune system since we don't have the normal exposure to pathogens that are necessary to maintain a healthy immune system. This makes it more likely we will see a resurgence of illness when things open up, as folks will be dealing with their environment with a weakened immune system. In other words, we need fellowship more than we thought.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. We rightly hear a lot these days about the heroic service being provided by healthcare workers in the front lines of the fight against the virus the Chinese Communist Party deliberately unleashed on the rest of the world. Unless, that is, they conclude on the basis of first-hand experience and analysis of available data that the lockdowns imposed nationwide have not been justified and are now causing immense and unwarranted harm. According to YouTube, two California doctors recently violated the company's community guidelines by reaching such conclusions in videotape remarks. According to its CEO, quote, anything that goes against World Health Organization recommendations would violate our community standards policy, unquote. We're in real trouble if an international agency that's been a puppet of communist China is allowed to dictate what we know about the attack it unleashed on us and the appropriate response to it. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I would be much more engaged in the world. We can't step back. If in fact, for example, we solve the problem in the United States of America and you don't solve it other parts of the world, you know what's going to happen. You're going to have travel bans. You're going to not be able to have economic intercourse around the world. There's a lot. Look, when America goes alone, when America is first, it's America alone.
That's the presumptive Democratic nominee for President Joe Biden. I just wanted you to hear him. He's concerned about economic intercourse. That's what he said in that clip. It's just amazing. I mean, yesterday when Hillary Clinton was endorsing him for president, he actually looked like he dozed off. I watched it. I mean, it was amazing. I feel like we're living in the middle of a novel that I don't think anyone could have been imaginative enough to create. But we are. And this is the guy that everyone's endorsing. We know now, of course, that Tara Reid, who has accused him of sexual, well, I don't know if you'd call it rape. If it's, I don't know. I don't want to get into the specifics. Let's just say it was very physical assault, very demeaning. And it wasn't just, you know, it was physical, a physical assault. That's as far as I should go with that. But let me just say, I initially was skeptical because I couldn't imagine, you know, a girl bringing up an accusation that was from so very long ago. But now I have actually looked at this, and I feel that there's validity to what she's saying. She's had a neighbor and a friend to speak up, saying they both remembered. One of them says that they love and support Joe Biden, but she has to speak the truth, that she remembers when this happened to Tara. We have a clip of Tara's mother calling in on Larry King Live not long after the assault, the alleged assault, we should say, sexual assault, took place. It was a program on Larry King about sexual assault in the Senate and in the Congress. And Tara's mother calls in and says her daughter just left the employee of a very high-level senator, and she could get no – her mother was very careful, very ladylike. She had nowhere to turn, no one to talk to. No response. As I recall, Tara got fired because Biden was, according to Tara, disappointed that she, you know, I think he said basically, well, I thought you were into me or something like that. So I thought you liked me. I think that's what he said when she refused more advances. Advances is too nice. Yeah. So we have some pretty good reasons to believe that Joe Biden, we've had, you know, years of you've probably seen those tapes that circulated, and I've certainly used them and showed them and talked about them, of his touching women in public places. And you can see it. There's a whole montage. He has a history doing that. I told you that the Secret Service, the female Secret Service agents, I knew this from inside sources, complained that Joe Biden would swim in the nude. I found out yesterday he didn't just swim in the nude. He would walk around in the nude, and they had a code for that because it was so offensive to the female Secret Service agents. This is the kind of person that you've never heard that he is, because, you know, the media kind of circles the wagons, don't they? And they're doing the same thing around Tara Reid. But so it was interesting then. Hillary, you know, endorses Joe Biden. And in fact, let's listen to a little bit of that. That's clip 16.
I think that someone making a serious allegation like sexual assault is should be believed. And there should be a fair process to try to determine what the appropriate response is.
I am thrilled to be part of your campaign, to not only endorse you, but to help highlight a lot of the issues that are at stake in this presidential election. For me, this is a moment that we need a leader, a president like Joe Biden.
Well, that's a little bit of an incomplete part of the story. First of all, the first part of that montage was Hillary Clinton speaking during the Me Too movement, during the Kavanaugh era. Women should be believed. Yes, I do believe women should be believed. I wish we had the many times I remember really well when she was the wife of President Bill Clinton. And she said that the women who were coming out report the many, 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 many women that came out and reported assaults and even rapes. By the way, I've interviewed Juanita Broderick more than once. I interviewed lots of people who were involved with Bill Clinton. I interviewed the Arkansas State Troopers that reported his horrible involvement and of women. It was with women in various degrees. I remember Henry Hyde telling me, during a commercial break in Chicago, that we think that Bill Clinton actually raped someone when he was at Oxford. So I'm just telling you horrendous things. And yet, what was Mrs. Clinton's response when all of those women were coming out? This is what she called it. I wish we had a tape. She called it the bimbo eruption. These were just bimbos. This was the bimbo eruption. And so she actually formed a task force out of the White House to destroy the women that came forward. But then when the Me Too movement started and Brett Kavanaugh, she believed that women should be believed. And now we have this accusation by Tara Reid, which really has some real strong undergirding evidence that it's actually true. And by the way, Tara Reid is now demanding that Joe Biden release the records, senatorial records, the records of his office, because she knows that she reported this incident. And so he's been stone cold silent on this. And then, of course, you have the other women should be believed advocate. And I'd forgotten how much I missed her, Kristen Gillibrand. She endorsed Biden, and this is what she had to say. Clip 7.
And Senator, I also wanted to ask you about an issue in the news right now concerning the allegation against Joe Biden by Tara Reid, who's a former staffer of his. I was wondering what your reaction is to that situation. Do you believe the allegation that's been put out there by Tara Reid against Biden?
So when we say believe women, it's for this explicit intention of making sure there's space for all women to come forward, to speak their truth, to be heard. And in this allegation, that is what Tara Reid has done. She has come forward, she has spoken, and they've done an investigation in several outlets. Those investigations, Vice President Biden has called for himself. Vice President Biden has vehemently denied these allegations, and I support Vice President Biden.
Do you think some of the Democrats who supported Blasey Ford's allegations against Kavanaugh, who've been silent on this Biden allegation, do you see that as a contradiction, that they're not speaking out more and addressing Tara Reid's allegation?
No, and I stand by Vice President Biden. He's devoted his life to supporting women, and he has vehemently denied this allegation.
You see how this works. Kirsten Gillibrand was the one who was, she was one of the many who was so wicked to Judge Kavanaugh on these flimsy accusations, especially the one that he was part of some gang rape group. It got more and more bizarre by the day. And by the way, could I just please add that that is exactly what happened to Justice Moore in Alabama? Justice Moore did not have the establishment Republicans. They did not have his back, the people in power, because they wanted him to be defeated, so no one ever came to his defense. But that's what happened to him, too. Anyway, it's a great way of destroying men, except if you're the right kind of guy. And Joe Biden is the right kind of guy. He's the kind of guy that right now they can manipulate and use. But even if he were in his right mind, he would be their right kind of guy, because he's all over the map. And I think based on all the things that I have known through the years about him, I am inclined to believe Tara Reid, especially with the other people coming forward and the tape of her mother. It's just some really incontrovertible evidence. And Tara's own response, you know, she said she doesn't even like President Trump. She's a Democrat. Her friends say they're going to vote for Joe Biden. They're Democrats, but they believe Tara. So it's just a very interesting juxtaposition. And so but don't worry, if you're confused about who to vote for, there is an answer. If you don't like President Trump and you are concerned about Joe Biden, and I hope that you are concerned about Joe Biden, Justin Amash has just launched an exploratory committee. He wants to be the Libertarian presidential contender, and so he's here to save the day. You might remember that Justin Amash was elected in 2010 by the Tea Party in Michigan. He was very good at first. He was a breath of fresh air. I remember that. He was one of the founders of the Tea Party, of the Freedom Caucus in the House, which is, you know, Jim Jordan and was Mark Meadows and others. And so Justin Amash was one of the founders of that. And then somehow, somewhere, he decided to go his own way and started and was very proud of himself for going his own way. And so he was the one Republican who voted in favor of the two articles of impeachment against President Trump. Now, don't misunderstand me by saying that if there weren't good evidence of impeachment, reasons for impeachment against President Trump, then I think any Republican should have voted against him. But I think the whole thing was a circus, and certainly Justin knew that. But now don't worry. He's going to be all those people like Jeff Flake, who says former senator from Arizona, the sound defeat of President Trump in the 2020 election would be better for the Republican Party. So says Jeff Flake. I don't know anyone who thinks that this is the future of the party. This is a demographic cul-de-sac. Anger and resentment only go so far. You have to have a governing philosophy. So according to Jeff Flake, President Donald Trump, his platform is anger and resentment. He doesn't have a governing philosophy. I think he has a big-time governing philosophy. He says, America first. Bring the jobs home. I'll bring the factories home. I'll put people to work. Consider America's interests first. I think that is his governing philosophy, but Jeff Flake doesn't seem to be able to hear that. He said, by the way, Jeff Flake said he wouldn't rule out voting for a Democrat in the fall. He said, it isn't the first time I voted for a Democrat. Well, that's not too much of a surprise given his record. I was never so happy when someone left the Senate as when Jeff Flake left the Senate. He was just I don't know what gets into these guys. Common sense doesn't, that's for sure. But maybe Jeff now can vote for Justin Amash and they'll all be happy. I actually think Justin Amash's throwing his hat in the ring is dangerous to President Trump because I think the margins are going to be so thin of victory, whatever happens, that even a few, you know, even just a few thousand votes cast for a libertarian candidate could be a big problem. So I sort of laugh at it, but I'm not laughing at it. It's just another step to try to prevent President Trump from winning another term. And then in case you missed it, I didn't read this to you yesterday. I was going to because the Congress, the House, now the Senate's back in session. The House was, you know, going to be going back in session next Monday as well. But I read this. Here it is. This was 2 days ago. People are still scared, said one senior congressional source about the return. There is still apprehension among lawmakers about returning to the National Capital Region. A number of senior aides from both sides of the aisle blasted the decision to return. We are risking ourselves to vote on confirmations? In other words, you know, like people that President Trump needs to put in place in various parts of the government. We're risking ourselves to vote on confirmation? Asked one senator who asked not to be identified. There are questions about the validity of this. And so you might be interested to know that suddenly it's been announced that, oh, it wasn't Nancy Pelosi and it wasn't Steny Hoyer who decided, but the physician for the House has advised the House not to return as the rise of the coronavirus cases in Washington, D.C. So they've decided, they've done an about-face. They're not going to go back because it's just people are still scared. That's the real reason. People are still scared. Now, you people on the front line, you medical workers, we expect you to go in there. We expect our drivers who drive our limousines and the people, I guess, who stock Nancy Pelosi's refrigerators with ice cream, they have to still work and come into her house. But they're, you know, not those congressmen. You know, I think I just can't even imagine. Can you imagine if our founding fathers heard about this? Can you imagine the Patrick? I'm doing a Joe Biden now. Patrick Henry saying, give me liberty or give me death. To Nancy Pelosi and the senator who whispered, we're risking ourselves to vote for confirmation. You know, we're just way important to put ourselves at risk, but the rest of you people, not so much. They do feel that way, and that's why we need to clean house in the Senate and the House. And by the way, there is an election coming up in 2020. Every member of the House comes up for a vote, and boy, there was another long article. Oh, I wish I had to read this, but this is a long interview that the Daily Caller did with that Democratic lawmaker who endorsed President Trump. It's a Georgia State Rep, Vernon Jones. It's amazing. He talks about all the things that President Trump has done on criminal justice reform, historic support for historic black colleges, economic opportunity zones, and he said the party immediately went after him. So he says he just talks about how he thinks those policies have helped him and his family. And he said the left wants blacks, they don't want blacks thinking for themselves. Conservative white people, I find, they want you to think for yourself. And so it's just amazing what's happened to him. We should put that on our Facebook page so that you can read it. It's what happened to this Georgia rep, Vernon Jones, after he spoke out in favor of Donald Trump. It's a pretty amazing story. All right. Well, that's it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.